This podcast may contain adult language and situations, graphic, gory details, and other not so nice things. Listener discretion is advised.
I'm Lacey.
And I'm Ashley. And this is United States of Murder. This week, we're in Illinois talking about the murder of an entire family.
Then we'll discuss the boogeyman in the blue bandana. Buckle up and join us on this dark and twisted ride through the Prairie State.
Rick G. married Ruth in 1997, and the couple blended their families. Rick had three children, and Ruth had two. 4-year-old Justina and 2-year-old Dylan. So Rick's kids were, like, much older.
Okay.
The couple went on to have Austin in 1998, and then Jessica, who suffered from a brain injury and became a ward of the state, which is super sad. Then they had baby Tabitha in 2006. Rick's older daughter, Nicole, was married, and she had two kids, so this whole family is growing. They're happy. Everyone's good. Rick and Ruth didn't have a lot of money, but they got by. Same. So when Rick didn't show up for work on the morning of September 21st, his stepdad drove over to their house to check on them. What he found when he arrived was straight out of a horror movie. The family of five had been slaughtered. There was blood everywhere. He called the police immediately. So they show up, EMS workers show up, and it was so bad they couldn't tell if they had been shot or stabbed or what had happened. There were blood smears all over the walls. There were pools of blood on the porch. 46-year-old Rick was found face down in the living room floor. There was blood splattered on the ceiling, floor, and walls. He had been hit in the head at least 13 times. His 39-year-old wife was found in the bedroom. She was also struck 13 times. She was hit so hard that her skull collapsed over her eyes.
Oh, gosh. Wait, so they were both hit 13 times?
Yeah, there's no significance to
that. That's so strange, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Ugh.
14-year-old Dylan was found in the doorway of his bedroom, and he was hit over 30 times.
Ugh.
11-year-old Austin was in the bathroom, and he was hit 8 times and had both sides of his skull caved in. 11, same age as Max, tiny. Tabitha, who was age 3, was found in her bedroom floor. She was alive, but severely injured.
Oh.
Her right ear, the skin had been peeled back, and she had a fractured skull, brain swelling, and a fractured arm. She was airlifted to Peoria Hospital and placed in protective custody. She could not see or speak due to all the swelling in her face.
Oh my gosh.
So the entire G family was laid to rest on September the 28th. Justina, their 16-year-old, was also found dead, but it didn't go into details. Anything I found on how or where she was found. So the police are like, who in the world would do this? This family just kind of kept to themselves. They were hard workers, and this was brutal.
Yeah.
This is super small town. There's like 250 people, and everyone's terrified. There seemed to be no motive. The only thing that was taken was the family's laptop. So that's it.
That's weird.
And then they're like, why would you do this to the children? Like, if you had beef with mom and dad, you're going to hit a 3-year-old? I mean, it just didn't make any sense. Rick had recently started his own construction business, and Ruth was a stay-at-home mom, and these kids were all happy and thriving.
Mm-hmm.
There was a bloody handprint on the vanity in the bathroom where 11-year-old Austin was found, and a shoe print, like a tennis shoe print, in the mud outside the house, and they could tell that these were K-Swiss shoes, like it left the print. Police interviewed neighbors and the people who knew this family, and there were a lot of leads. They followed up on all of them, and the only thing the neighbors said really was they saw a gray pickup truck with exhaust coming out of the bed over at the house the day that the family was murdered. So cops are looking for this truck. Nicole, Rick's oldest daughter, went to the hospital and stayed with her little sister, Tabitha. Her estranged husband, Christopher Harris, would come up there to visit. You know, that's his ex-wife or soon-to-be ex-wife. But, you know, they had kids together. Mm-hmm. He was in their lives, the kids' lives, so he would go check on Tabitha, too. One day, Christopher was leaving. At the same time, one of the officers that was assigned to watch over Tabitha was leaving. Like, he was ending his shift, too, so they'd get in the elevator together. And he noticed that Christopher had on K-Swiss tennis shoes. They were the same ones that had left the mark in the mud outside the G house. So this police officer reports this, and Christopher is called in for questioning. They take an imprint of his shoe, but it was a half a size bigger than the one from the house. So it wasn't the same size.
Okay.
His fingerprint and handprint were also taken and sent to the crime lab. His brother came in and gave him an alibi for the night of the murders. They were out together and nowhere near the town of Beeson, which is where the G family lived. Lab results come back, and the handprint and fingerprints match Christopher.
They do.
So on October 9th, 2009, 30-year-old Christopher Harris was arrested and charged with 5 counts of first-degree murder, attempted murder, and Jason Harris, Christopher's brother, and his girlfriend, Jennifer Ernest, and her mother, Sarah Duncan, were also arrested. So Jennifer and Sarah were charged with obstructing justice. Jason was charged with murder and attempted murder. On October 28th, the Harris brothers were charged with over 50 counts, including murder, attempted murder, home invasion, residential robbery, and criminal sexual assault.
Why? Why would his brother help him, and why would his family cover any...
Jennifer and her mother, Sarah, were charged with fabricating alibis, setting fire to clothing, destroying evidence, hiding the laptop, and lying to police.
Wow.
Jason turned state's witness and testified against his brother for a reduced sentence. He said on the night of the crime, the two brothers were out drinking, smoking weed, and doing coke, and they tried to hook up with some girls, but it didn't pan out. So they drove over to the G house so Christopher could hook up or attempt to hook up with 16-year-old Justina. When Christopher got out of the truck, he grabbed the tire iron out of the back and headed into the house. Jason said he stayed in the truck. He heard loud screams and heard a few loud thumps. He saw 14-year-old Dylan jump out of the bedroom window, and then he went around to the front door and back in the house to save his family.
Oh, man.
A few minutes later, he stumbles out of the house, bleeding profusely. Chris is right behind him. He hits Dylan 5 or 6 more times in the head. Then Chris goes back inside the house.
No.
Dylan gets up and goes back inside the house to try to save his family. Yeah, it's just horrific. Chris beats them all to death with a tire iron. He then comes back to the truck a few minutes later, throws his shoes and the tire iron out the window down some country road. Jason said he had lied about the alibi to the police when questioned after the murder. Prosecutors stated that just a week before the murder, there had been a sexual assault charge that was dismissed, brought against Chris in relation to Justina. So I don't know if maybe he had tried or attempted to assault her, and the family found out about it and was pressing charges, but they were dropped for some reason. Maybe his estranged wife talked his her parents into dropping it. We don't know. A search warrant was issued for the Harris home, and they found the truck matching the description, but it didn't have the exhaust pipes like the witnesses had said. So they, you know, they're searching the entire property. They search a shed, and they find a weight bench that when, like, leaned on its side or upside down, like the legs were sticking up,
right,
it looked exactly what the witnesses described. Like, it looked like, like, you know, exhaust, but it was like the weight bench was in the back of the truck and was sticking up. They also found the G's laptop under a tarp. They drove the route that the brothers had taken. They searched on the side of the road and found the tire iron and the shoes. DNA matched the shoes, blood, tire iron, all of it to Christopher and the G family. Mm. Tabitha recovered and was placed in foster care while the court decided if she should go to grandma or stay in DHS. And the community built a park named after the G family. So Jennifer Eason, the girlfriend, was sentenced to 24 months of probation and a $2,500 fine for obstructing justice. In 2013, Christopher Harris goes to trial. He claims that when he walked into the G home around 1 a.m. that morning, he caught 14-year-old Dylan in the middle of murdering his family.
Oh, yeah, sure.
He said he had to defend himself, and he ended up killing Dylan in the process. This kid jumped out a window and kept going back inside. He wasn't murdering his family, and you caught him.
No one believed that.
Dr. Anderson from Iowa State University testified as an expert witness on Christopher's behalf. He said Dylan was a disturbed child, had a low IQ, showed antisocial tendencies, struggled in school, and played disturbing video games. He also alleged that Dylan said he couldn't wait for the school to blow up after he failed a test.
Mm.
Teachers from the school testified that Dylan was not a violent child. Maybe he missed a deadline on some homework, but that's it. Like, he wasn't – they didn't think he was going to show up and, like, shoot anyone, or he wasn't a fighter or troublemaker or anything like that. Jason testified to his brother's motive. He said, robbery. They took the laptop. You murdered an entire family. Your soon-to-be ex-wife's family for a laptop?
It's wild, though. Some people, when they do drugs, just get so aggressive and impulsive. Where to us, it's like, that makes absolutely no sense, but...
Well, the laptop had video camera footage on it from the G's security system, which would be able to tell possibly the sexual assault. Also, it recorded who the real killer was, but they destroyed the laptop.
Yeah.
So we'll never know. Christopher was found guilty of all charges. And on July 19th, 2013, his sentence hearing started. Tabitha G gave her impact statement.
Oh my gosh.
She was seven at this point. So
how much did she remember?
She said she wished that he was dead and her brothers, sisters, mom, and dad were still here. She said, you have to say you're sorry because you know how bad you broke my heart.
That is, ugh.
And now I have a knot in my throat. He was sentenced to 5 life sentences to be served consecutively, no parole, plus 80 years for attempted murder, robbery, and home invasion. Jason's murder charge was dropped as part of the plea deal. He pled guilty to homicide concealment, delivery of a controlled substance, and obstruction of justice. And he was sentenced to 20 years in prison with credit for time served.
Mm.
The G family home was torn down. Tabitha now lives with her grandmother. Nicole and her children have nothing to do with her ex-husband, Christopher. And Nicole ended up losing custody of her kids due to neglect and drug use.
Mm.
So we still 100% don't know what the motive was for them to even go over to the house that night, but
the rage, good Lord.
To go room by room, and this, if you want to watch a show about this,
not
on Murder Comes to Town season one, episode two, it's called The Devil Wears Sneakers.
So why was the print a larger size?
He did, he threw his shoes away, so he had to go buy new ones and they didn't have a size.
Oh,
so instead of like a nine, he got a 9.5.
Oh, I was thinking he was...
like to throw them off?
He was... he's not... yeah.
I mean, this is a small town. Yeah. They're like, okay, well, we got a 10.
Yeah.
And he's like, fuck it, give them to me.
Yeah.
He walks
in
barefoot.
He buys the same type of shoe?
Same shoe.
Okay.
I mean, maybe it was just like all they had. I don't know, but yeah, so awful. To go from room to room with a tire iron.
No, I
hate it. And the way – it's 1 a.m. It's and the way everyone is spread out in the house, you know they had to have woke up and were trying to get somewhere. You know what I mean?
Home invasions just freak me out so much.
That's your safe space, your home.
There's a reason why The Strangers is –
horrifying,
like, to me, the scariest movie.
Yeah, I need to
and they don't have a reason either.
No. Ugh. I need to booby trap my house like Home Alone. Not even kidding.
Oh, I know.
I think if something happened, I would probably panic. I don't think that my flight or fight instincts are very good.
Well, I don't think you would know unless you were in the situation, honestly.
That's true. And I hope
truly.
I never am.
Ugh.
But like if somebody came in my bedroom, Lacey, I'm a sitting duck.
Don't give me nightmares.
Like I have nowhere to go.
Yeah.
I would have to run in my bathroom, which I have a pocket door, and that bitch, I have to like wiggle it, spit on it.
Oh, I hate
everything
pocket doors.
To like
they never
get
work.
It to pull out. I would hang on just a second, murderer. Let me try.
Oh my God.
No. Mm-mm.
I want a panic room, a hidden panic room.
I would forget the code and be locked in there.
Yeah.
That would be my luck.
I've seen some cool ones. Not like
where?
In person, just online browsing panic rooms, you know.
Like one does.
Like one does. Where someone has, you know, going up the steps, like you pull up the steps and it's a...
like an attic, Lacey? Those would be attics.
No. Not up on the steps. Like the steps themselves are a door.
What?
They're steps. I can't explain this.
You sure
they're
cannot.
They're steps, but you pull them up. It's not an attic because it's on the ground still, but it's like a hidey hole. Like you're hiding in the steps.
Oh, okay.
You understand what I'm saying?
So like, it like folds up like a tornado shelter?
Yes.
Okay.
And but then like you- in the steps. So it's not big, but it's there. And then obviously the bookcases that you move or, you know, scoot like a barn door on the wall, those things that...
those
big
are all,
with Joanna Gaines.
Yeah.
But a bookshelf.
Those are all very good.
I know. I want one. Samuel isn't
you
into the idea, but I'm into it.
Where could you put one in your house without having to like do reconstruction?
Well, you would have to do reconstruction. I guess that's why he's not into the idea.
I want like that rug that's in like your hallway. It just looks like a oriental rug, and it has like a – you pull it up, like it folds up, and then you go – and then you just pull it back down.
Yes. Got to figure this out.
I watched too many World War II movies.
Yeah.
All the hidey-hoes that they had.
Hidey-hoes.
And I am poor and don't have one.
They need to focus on this in new construction. I'm just saying.
They should definitely offer it. And not look at you like you're crazy. If you can put a storm shelter in your garage floor, I feel like a hidey-ho is not that
far-fetched.
Two
for one, yeah. Well, let's take a break before we get into my case.
Okay.
All right, I have one for you that I had never heard about before. In 1982... 23-year-old Deborah Shepherd was a marketing major at Southern Illinois University in Carbondale. She was actually just 2 weeks away from her graduation, which, smooth sailing those last
2 weeks. 2 weeks?
You
I'm
know?
Not doing shit.
Yeah. She was smart, but she was also friendly, charismatic, and hardworking. A friend found Deborah's nude body inside her apartment on the night of April 8th, 1982, 2 weeks from graduation. She had been sexually assaulted and then strangled to death. There are no leads, no good suspects, and for nearly 25 years, police had no idea who killed Deborah. But the killer did make a mistake there that would eventually lead to his undoing. He left semen on her shirt. So back in 1982, DNA technology had yet to be completely developed, and it wasn't really used in investigations, but they saved it in case in the future it might be needed.
That's crazy that they just would save things from the past, just in case.
In 2007, Lieutenant Paul Eccles calls for a review of the DNA in Deborah's murder. So when it first happened back in 82, he was a rookie cop and he covered the case. It always bugged him. He was hoping that eventually maybe he could catch her killer. And wouldn't you know it, the DNA was a match. It matched that of an inmate at Big Muddy Correctional Center. This inmate had recently been moved there and was placed in the Illinois DNA registry. Like, he just got placed in that registry. His name was Timothy Wayne Krager, and in 2007, he was 68 years old. When Lieutenant Eccles found out that there was a match, he drove straight to the prison to interview Timothy. He originally denied any involvement, but the next day he called and confessed to Deborah's murder.
He called the...
Yeah. I don't know why, but he called to confess.
And
he's in prison right now already.
You'd think he would try to wheel and deal, you know?
Yeah. After investigating further, the police discovered that Deborah was not his first victim or his last. In fact, they were able to link him to 8 other murders.
8?
Yes.
And was never caught.
And this is not even why he's in prison.
Hot checks?
No. Authorities in Missouri also checked into whether Timothy could be responsible for 5 other unsolved killings and rapes in the state. And turns out he was a perfect match for the DNA involved in the murders of a string of women in Cape Girardeau, Missouri, dating back to 1977. So Carbondale is in South Illinois and is only an hour away from Cape Girardeau and is super close to the Kentucky border as well. So he was really close to multiple states where he was.
And those are both small towns.
Yeah. In the beginning, he refused to confess, and then he was offered a deal that would allow him to escape the death penalty.
There it is.
Yep. He knew that with that many murders, he was as good as dead, so he confessed and pled guilty to 9 murders. Timothy was born in West Mahoney Township, Pennsylvania, to Charles McBride and Fern Yost on November 28, 1944. And I hate that he has Anders' birthday. If I knew about this guy then, I would have asked for them to speed up the Pitocin or slow the Pitocin down. Anyway, when Timothy was around 1 year old, his dad abandoned him and his mom.
Aww.
When he was around 5 or 6, his mom met and married Bernie Krager, so he legally changed his last name. When Timothy was 10, he began to develop an unhealthy sexual and emotional obsession with his mom. Yikes. There's no elaboration on that. That's just, I guess, what he confessed. And he began his criminal career early. I'm talking, he was 6 years old, stealing bikes. And when he was 13, he got busted for voyeurism and exhibitionism. So,
he just liked to be naked.
Yeah. And he was charged again with petty theft when he was 15. He enlisted in the U.S. Navy at age 17. And in 1962, he participated in basic training at Great Lakes, Illinois. So that's how he got from Pennsylvania to Illinois. He was dishonorably discharged for sexual assault in 1963, after he was just there for 14 months. Timothy later enrolled at Southern Illinois University in Carbondale, where he earned a bachelor's degree in administration of justice.
Wow.
With a minor in psychology. So these are 2 areas that could help him.
Well, I mean, I'll just tell you, the math part of college almost took me out. So
same. I didn't know if it was going to work out.
It was dicey.
Oh, tell me about it. My high school didn't do me any favors. I was just talking about that last night.
No.
I digress. He first entered the Illinois prison system in 1963 on a rape conviction. And since then, he spent most of his adult life behind bars for sex crimes, except for a brief period of freedom in the late 1970s and early 1980s. And this is when he killed 9 women. And
golly.
Yeah, and he's been incarcerated since 1982. In May of 1963, while in prison, his wife Barbara gave birth to their daughter Charlotte.
He was married?
Yes. Mm-hmm. All these sex crimes, and yeah, he was married. Charlotte never met her father, which probably a good thing. By 1965, he and Barbara had separated, and by 69, he was transferred to the Menard Correctional Facility. He later moved to Vienna Correctional Center in 1972, where he worked as an inmate EMT. I always wonder why they move inmates around so much. I get it if they're hurting other inmates and that kind of thing, but if not, shuffling them around.
Maybe there were threats against them or something, you know, like inmates.
That's just something I just thought about. But his first murders were the killings of the mother-daughter duo, Mary and Brenda Parsh, on August 12th, 1977. Brenda, then 27 years old, had just flown home to Cape Girardeau, Missouri, to help her 58-year-old mother, Mary, while her father was in the hospital. Police found the two women's nude bodies lying next to each other on a bed with their hands tied behind their backs.
Oh, God.
Turns out Timothy had been stalking Mary because she lived alone, and he believed that she would be an easy target. He was surprised when two women arrived back at the house, and he was hiding and waiting. So he raped Brenda, the daughter, and then shot them both dead. And then he left right after this to attend a friend's bachelor party, because the next day he was a groomsman. Just like business as usual. Raped, murdered, bachelor party.
Ugh.
Yeah. Over the next 5 years, he killed Sheila Cole in November of 1977, Virginia Lee Witt in May 1978, Joyce Tharp in March of 1979, and Myrtle Rupp in April of 1979. In January of 1982, he strangled 57-year-old Marjorie Call to death in Cape Girardeau, and this time he left behind strands of his own hair, and he was getting more and more reckless at the crime scenes.
Are these all these women in Missouri, or kind of did he bounce back and forth between Illinois and Missouri?
He bounced around from, yeah.
That's super close to Arkansas, too, and Tennessee and Kentucky.
Yeah, he wasn't charged with any other states other than those, but I mean, yeah, he was close to Indiana. And that's kind of what took them so long to find him, because mm-hmm. all these murders were happening across other state borders, and they weren't adding up that, oh, this guy's the same guy.
Mm-hmm.
So next, he shot and sexually assaulted and strangled Mildred Wallace, who was 65, in her Cape Girardeau home. This time, he left behind blood, his own blood, a bootlace he used as a garrote, and a palm print, and bits of his skin were found underneath her fingernails. So he just left all kinds of DNA there. In 1981, Ida White was viciously attacked, but luckily survived. And at that time, they actually thought a guy named Grover Thompson killed her. They felt pretty certain about it. But the DNA evidence revealed in 2007, it was actually Timothy who attacked her. And by then, Grover Thompson had died in prison. So this guy was sent to prison for a murder he did not commit. And he was wrongfully convicted, and he became the first person to be granted clemency by the University of Illinois Innocence Project after death. Like, they granted it. They cleared his name even though he was already dead.
That's awful.
I know. I know. It's that kind of thing that just is, ugh. So Timothy was working for an ambulance company in Carbondale when Deborah was murdered in 1982. He watched her through the window of her ground floor apartment, and after waiting for her roommate to leave, he forced his way through a window while she showered. And there are some timeline gaps in between these murders, and that's because he was in and out of prison for sex crimes. It's crazy to me that he would get caught for sex crimes and not for murders.
Semen.
They were still alive, so they likely were like, it's that guy or yeah, that guy that lived down the street, or he was bald with a mustache.
Yeah.
In 1963, he raped a woman in Waukegan, Illinois, and stabbed her with a pair of scissors.
Don't stab me.
Ugh, the woman survived, and then he raped a second woman in Chicago. He was convicted of rape and attempted murder and sentenced to 25 to 50 years in a Joliet prison. Yeah, so he perplexed investigators for so long because he chose his victims completely randomly and attacked in multiple geographic locations. And other than being females, they didn't have much in common. Some were white, some were black, some were in their 20s, some were in their 60s. He didn't just like go after a white woman with brown hair that looked like an ex of his or whatever.
His mom.
Yeah. Investigators believe that he was motivated by sexual urges that led him to first rape and then murder his victims. He told Lieutenant Eccles that he would just go to a parking lot of a grocery store and look for women to target. If he liked them, he'd follow them home and see where they lived. Then, in a couple of weeks, he would wait for the woman to leave, break in, and wait for them.
That's horrifying.
I know. Just to think you could be putting crap in your car from TJ Maxx and someone sees you and follows you home. It really is freaky. And he would wear a blue bandana over his face and was dubbed as the boogeyman in the blue bandana. So Timothy was sentenced on December 10th, 2007 to 40 years in prison for the 1982 killing of Deborah Shepherd and charged with 5 more counts of murder and 3 counts of rape against women in the Cape Girardeau area from 77 to 82. On January 18th, 2008, he pleaded guilty and was sentenced to another 40 years in prison for the 78 killing of Marion, Illinois resident Virginia Lee Witt. On April 4th, 2008, he pleaded guilty to the murder of 5 women in Cape Girardeau, Missouri, 7 sexual assaults, and 1 robbery. He was sentenced to an additional 13 consecutive life terms, and relatives of the victims did agree to the plea bargain, and that's what took the death penalty off the table. At his sentencing in April of 2008, Timothy stated, "I don't know if I could have been so generous if I were in the same situation. Thank you for sparing my life."
Shut up.
I know, exactly. And he's currently held at the Pontiac Correctional Center in Pontiac, Illinois. So that's the Blue Man and a Boogeyman.
Never.
Neither had I.
Heard of this.
And he looks like a real creeper. I mean, we obviously are going to post pictures, but yeah. Just someone stalking you.
That's horrifying.
Ugh, I know.
I live alone. I go to the grocery store alone. Somebody could follow me and watch me and sneak in my house. I gotta go home by myself tonight.
I know. Put nails out on your front porch. Start booby trapping.
I said I'm gonna do my house like home alone. Trapping.
There's the newest season of Fargo. One of the female protagonists booby traps her home. And I'm talking like crazy booby trapping, like you're going to die a horrific death if you like walk in a door.
That is what I want.
But it's, yeah.
That's what I want. I have a dog, obviously, Wendy, and I had a friend stop by the other night and I was doing stuff. And so I just literally text like, front door's unlocked, just come on in. I'm thinking, oh crap. I you know, when I heard the front door open, like, Wendy's going to bark and go nuts. Not a peep. And so I walk in and she's literally on her back in the hallway getting her stomach rubbed. I'm like, you're the worst 90-pound guard dog ever.
Oh, man.
No warning, no bark, not a peep.
That's funny.
Like, that's it. You're going to Lacey's. I'm just kidding.
God. Well, I feel like I wouldn't even know there was an intruder because any noise I hear in the middle of the night, I'm just like, oh, what are the cats doing? You know, they're always into something at night. I'm not thinking someone's in the house. I'm like, oh my God, I'll deal with that in the morning.
I don't hear anything because my box fan sounds like I'm landing a helicopter in my bedroom. So I don't hear anything ever.
You would think between our fan and the snoo, I wouldn't, but I do. I hear some cats causing drama.
You have like grandma ears.
I guess
so. Your grandma could hear everything.
I'm like, what's that cat doing down the hallway?
What's going on here? So.
We just got a fresh patron.
Oh, we did?
Like, she's fresh. I'm talking.
She's a newborn.
I'm talking. She just joined. Her name is Fatasia S.
I love it.
We're not sure where she's from yet, but
doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. If you want to email us, we'll put your pin in our little map and send you stickers. But thank you all the same. It's exciting.
It is exciting. Right at the end. This is our season 3 finale episode.
Yeah, we're taking a couple of months off.
Lacey's going to make some TikToks.
Oh my God.
We're going to attempt to transition over to the old TikTok because
we'll see how that goes.
I'm old and don't know how to do it. So Lacey's made several because they pop up on Max's TikTok and he'll say, look, Mom, it's Miss Lacey. And I'm like, girl.
It's of plants and it's of cats. Spoiler and thrift shopping if you're interested.
Yes. Speaking of thrift shops and thrift shopping, I bought the most amazing NASA flight suit.
Oh, you did. That's so freaking cool.
The Salvation Army thrift store in Hot Springs.
I can't believe someone got rid of that. It looks legit.
$4.
I can't.
$4. I found this and Max goes, Mom. I'm like, no. And I immediately am like taking my sunglasses off.
Oh, yeah.
And my purse. He's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm trying it on. And if this fits, we're walking out of here with this. He goes, where are you going to wear it? I'm like,
oh,
I'll wear it to every
me?
One of your football games if you mess with me. And it fits like a glove.
There's so many places. I have a costume closet.
This is not going to be a costume. I'm going to wear this to Dugan's for
trivia
night.
I bet you
will. I'm just
going to
walk in.
You should. That would actually
100%.
Get some aviators.
Oh my gosh. Are you an astronaut? No, I'm not actually. I found this.
For $4.
For $4. It's got pockets.
Oh my
God.
Hidden zippers,
they're hidden
for NASA
zippers.
Notes.
All of it's got all these and I will have to.
It's really cool.
You'll have to put
I was
pictures up.
Shooketh when I saw it.
We just talked about space.
Yeah, we did.
And all the things and the apocalypse and all the stuff. And then I walk in and find this. It was
that's
fate.
Some good luck. If I saw it, it would be size extra small, and I'd be like, "Are you freaking kidding me?" Like everything else I find.
I washed it and hung it up today. So she's drying.
Man.
She's
Amazing.
Ready. She's ready.
I'm here for it.
It has all the patches from all the Apollo missions.
Oh.
It's got patches of astronauts, like their names and shit.
Mm-hmm. That couldn't have been cheap.
What?
The suit.
It was $4.
No, I mean, originally.
I mean... I'm thinking it's real. People are disagreeing with me, but I'm like, no, this is real. This was on an Apollo mission. Probably not that, but
I don't know.
I don't either. I need to go on Antiques Roadshow and just see if there's an astronaut flight suit specialist just so happens to be in some warehouse in Birmingham where they're shooting this. And
very true.
But I'm telling you, if they offered me $1 million, I would sell it. But if it was like $100, she's going to come back home with me.
Yeah.
It's a piece of history.
It is.
And Max can wear it when he grows up. He's like, I'm not
you
wearing
know
that.
He's not going to keep that.
It's what I'm going to be for Halloween next year.
Yeah.
Pretty sure.
I'm like, you have options.
I really do.
There's always like multiple days of Halloween costumes as far as I'm concerned.
Also, I may just come with that on next time we record. You don't know.
Be hot up here.
It would. Well,
you probably don't need to do that.
Be
wait
like,
until the winter.
Be like me being
I'm
in
already
a space,
sweaty.
Space shuttle. Well, also, Abigail finally comes out this week and Late Night with the Devil, both on Friday. That's the ballerina vampire. You're not impressed.
No, I'm here for it. I haven't watched previews, but.
Well, first of all, you need to.
You know I'll have to wait till it comes on
Late Night with the Devil streams Friday.
But it's on Shudder, right?
I told you Curly Boy gave us his password. His password. We can watch it. We should watch it. Anyways, saw a couple bands this last weekend.
I saw that on a Sunday night.
I know, a school night.
I was where was that?
The hall.
Really?
Yes, yes.
And wow.
So the first band, I don't know if I can say their name or not, so I just won't.
The first band?
The first band.
Are you in cahoots?
No. So the first band that played, super kind of bluesy Americana, which I dig. He was amazing, had an amazing voice. Kind of reminded me of Pedro from Napoleon Dynamite, but nonetheless.
Okay.
Amazing voice. Second band is from Seattle. They have a full horn section, and the singer also plays guitar. He's the only one. He's like a baby John Mayer. And I don't say that lightly because I tell everyone John Mayer is Max's real dad.
Oh, my God.
Because I am in love with this man and have been for 100 years. Oh, but man. He sounds like a young John Mayer.
Hmm.
He doesn't play the guitar quite as well, but he will get there. They look like a bunch of college kids, but his voice is amazing. Guitar playing is amazing. Songwriting is amazing. Okay. Super impressed. I love an obscure band that no one knows who they are.
Hmm.
That's how I found Kings of Leon.
It's so secret, you're not even going to...
Well, I don't know if... I mean, I don't know the rules.
The rules.
I don't know the rules.
You can't produce songs and say that they're your own.
This is true. That's okay, so the John Mayer, Baby John Mayer, the band's called The Dip.
The Dip, when I dip. You dip, yes. You dip. Okay.
And the first guy is Jeremy Albino. Very cool, like I said. Bluesy,
is that a
folky.
Stage name? Or is that a real last name?
I mean, I didn't ask him.
Okay. I'm just...
Because he had security, because I tried. Anyways, cool merchandise. It wasn't crazy crowded.
Yeah,
probably because it's a school night. But anyways, what'd you do this past weekend?
I don't remember.
Girl.
You know how it is. Like, my brain, I can't remember. I'm scheduling a doctor's appointment on the phone yesterday, and I'm like, oh, what's the word? What's the word I'm trying to think of? The person's like, I don't know, ma'am. And I'm
just like, ma'am, I've got to go.
Like, no.
You've been holding up
no,
this line.
No, you know what I need. I don't know.
She's like, an appointment?
What did I do? I swam, played kickball, and that's what I did.
Well, those aren't terrible things. Those are fun.
Nope. This weekend, I'm going to see family. There's some extended family Anders has not met yet. So,
well, he's like 5 months old, so I know. He's got time. Bigfoot Fest is this weekend.
Are you going?
No, because let me tell you why. I have basketball tournaments.
Oh, my God. You're always at a sport.
Listen, if Max doesn't go to the NBA, I swear to God.
For real. The rate this kid's going, he's got to get scholarship or something.
I love to watch him play sports. All sports parents know what I'm talking about. We love to watch our kids play, but we're tired and we're broke. And we don't want to have to get up early and drive to a town far away on your weekends and end up playing the same team from the same town you live in.
That's so weird.
And our sciatic is hurt because bleachers suck, okay?
Man. You don't have those little pop-up seats?
I don't because I looked on Amazon and they're kind of expensive.
Yeah.
I don't want to pay $100 for a chair that just the back folds up.
That's how expensive they are?
Some of them are. Some of them are more than that because they're kind of like a backpack. So I just try to get all the way up to the top so I can like lean against the wall. I'm that person. But anyways, so we've got to drive 2 hours one way. Saturday and Sunday, and we have to be there at 9 a.m.
I don't mean to act like that's not a big deal, but 10-year-old basketball?
Girl, your
what?
Time is coming.
This seems absurd.
Your time is coming.
Sam's going to go alone.
But here's the thing. No, you won't. You won't. You won't. You'll go because you'll want to see him play.
I know.
But when you're where I am, my kid's going to be 20, and I'm going to be in your pool while you're gone because I'm not going to have a kid at home.
Oh, my gosh.
Do you have any plans while we're off? You're just going to rest and recoup and...
I'm going to rest, get caught up on things I couldn't get caught up on the last time because our last break I was...
Just had a baby.
in the hospital and then home with a baby that
newborn
didn't let me do anything, and I still can barely do anything.
I'm
going to rest. I'm going to learn how to use my Mac computer.
Well, we have a friend that's going to show you how and be your tech guy, so that'll be helpful. It won't be that hard. It'll come back to you. It's like riding a bike, I'm sure. I started reading a new book.
Oh.
So I'm going to try to read more on our break because I don't do enough reading, doing research. It is called The Boy Who Knew Too Much.
And I've heard of that.
Fascinated by this book.
What is it? Like, what type of book?
So there is this new podcast I started listening to called Box of Oddities.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like 700 episodes. It's so good. I just found it a couple weeks ago and I'm binging it. Very interesting. So it's about this little boy, Christian Haupt, Haupt. He's 15 now, but at 2 years old, he started talking about baseball nonstop, yada, yada. And 3x5, he allegedly is Lou Gehrig reincarnated.
What? It's
fascinating. Keep your opinions to yourself, Lacey. I know you don't believe
shit. No, I just haven't heard of this.
He's one of the best Little League baseball players in the world, and he's 15. He walks like him. He stands like him. He's got dimples like him, which I know isn't a big deal. A lot of people have dimples. Everybody at home, shut up. But he knows a lot. It's like every other kid reincarnated story you hear is he knows details about his life that other people wouldn't. His
what
parents
a random person.
Took him to the house that he lived in. And he went in and knew where everything was. This was my bedroom. This was this. That was that. Babe Ruth used to smoke cigarettes out here on the patio. Like, he knew everything. People that were friends with him, Lou Gehrig, when he was still alive, confirm the things that this kid is saying. Like, his mom's super, you know, super religious, Christian, whatever. And she talked to her pastor about it when he was like 3 or 4. And the pastor's like, it sounds like
demons.
A spirit of a demon.
Or why is it always demons?
It's always got to be a
it's
fucking demon.
It's not always freaking demons.
No, maybe it's reincarnation. Do you ever think about that, Father Ralph? So mom's like turned off by what her pastor said. She's like, no, he's not possessed by a demon. I'm really believe the things that he's saying. And so anyways, 3x5,000, because I almost told you the whole story. This is what the book's about. It's so good. And, you know, the mom's saying, like, if this has taught me anything, it's that we all should be open-minded about other people's experiences, because I was very closed-minded before this happened. And just essentially that, like, your soul is your soul and your body is just a vessel. And this doesn't mean that, you know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, that's why I'm afraid to kill bugs, because what if my soul turns into a wasp one day
I'm going to stomp you.
Then karma is going to roll back around and someone's going to spray me with bug spray.
And it'll be me, because they don't do anything. They're menaces.
I'm sure they do something.
What? They fly around and
off the top
you.
Of my head, maybe that'll be a patron, wasps. Just joking.
Anyways,
people are like, it's getting way too specific.
They're like, okay. Yeah. Yeah. It's a good book. So
I'm actually reading a book too. An audiobook. I'm listening.
You're
it's
not
the same
reading.
Thing. It's the same thing.
That is okay, go ahead. Go ahead, cheater.
It's the same thing. It's called The Passengers. It was actually suggested by listener Andy, and it's a British thriller. And I really like it. I love a British narrator too. I know you don't do accents. I do. I do. I love it.
Can we get
it's
someone from Boston to
I'm
read this
it.
For
oh
me?
Oh, my gosh. Casey Affleck. Like,
I mean, I'll take any of the Afflecks.
Oh, boy.
Oh, but we got to go.
Well, first.
Oh, shit. There's more.
Well, no. I just want to tell everybody, we're going on a break, but if you want to listen to more, go to patreon.com/United States of Murder, because we have monthly bonus episodes, and we're still going to be doing bonus episodes during our break. And we offer stickers, ad-free episodes, like I said, bonus episodes and more depending on which tier you join. And I'm sure we'll be posting some stuff in the meantime, so follow us on Instagram and Facebook at United States of Murder. And keep suggestions coming and wacky stories coming. Email us at unitedstatesofmurder@gmail.com or slide into our DMs like some of you do. But yeah.
And leave us a review. We need to do something for a review. No, because we're at 470.
Oh, are we?
We're
then there might be a new one.
We're so close to 500. If you're our 500th review leaver, we're gonna do something. We're gonna give you something. We're gonna send you something.
And if you swipe through, drowning is a form of asphyxiation. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Google it.
Yes.
I've just been ruffling
just
my feathers.
Kidding.
Yeah, leave us a review. And if you DM us and say, hey, I left you a review, we will mail you a sticker.
And for the record, I'm the loud one also.
Until season 4.
Bye.
Bye.